devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Sri Mati Bhakti Vatthi Swami Niti Namane Namaste Sarasvati Devi. Gauravani Pracharani Nirvasesa Sanyavani Paskajade Sitarane Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sadvrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tamasajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Saitha Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 So nice to be here on the first day of 2010. Starting a new year. Here in
all the mobiles to be on silent.
Okay, all mobiles be on silent. Nice to be here in Bahrain. How do you say Bahrain?
Balaram
Desh. Okay. And you actually have Balaram here on the altar. So reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 8, The Manifestation of Brahma from Vishnu, Text 13. Do we have it on the... We have not on the board. Tasyartha shukshma binivista drister antargaton Narto rajasataniyan gunena kalanu gatena vida susyams tatabiyata nabideshat. Tasya. His. Artha. Subject. Shukshma. Subtle. Anivista drishtehe. Of one whose attention was fixed. Antaha gataha, internal, artaha, purpose, rajasa, by the mode of passion of material nature, taniya, very subtle, gunena, by the qualities, kana anu gatena, in due course of time, vida, agitated, susyan, generating, tada, then, abhidyata, pierced through, nabideshat, from the abdomen. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. The subtle subject matter of creation on which the Lord's attention was fixed was agitated by the material mode of passion, and thus the subtle form of creation pierced through his abdomen. Text 14. Piercing through this, the sum total form of the fruitive activity, the sum total form of the fruitive activity of the living entities took the shape of the bud of a lotus flower generated from the personality of Vishnu. And by his supreme will, it illuminated everything. What illuminated everything?
Light emanating.
What was illuminating everything?
The light emanating.
The light emanating from? What? From the bud. And what was this bud, this lotus bud, what was it made of? The total fruitive activities of the living entity. And this bud had come from where? It had?
Navel.
From the navel. It had pierced through the abdomen and come out the navel. What's in the Lord's abdomen? Yasoda Mata saw in the Lord's all the universes. Piercing through this sum total form of the fruitive activity of the living entities took the shape of the bud of a lotus flower generated from the personality of Vishnu, and by his supreme will, it illuminated everything like the sun and dried up the vast waters of devastation. Text 15. Into that universal lotus flower, Lord Vishnu personally entered as the super soul. So what happened now? As the super soul into the lotus flower. And when it was thus impregnated with all the modes of material nature, the personality of Vedic wisdom, who we call the self-born, was generated. Who's that? Purport. The lotus flower... Background music. The lotus flower is a universal Virat form, or the gigantic form of the Lord in the material world. It becomes amalgamated in the personality of Godhead Vishnu in his abdomen at the time of dissolution, and it becomes manifest at the time of creation. This is due to Garbhadakshay Vishnu, who enters into each of the universes. In this form is the sum total of all the fruitive activities of the living entities conditioned by material nature. What kind of activities? Fruitive. Why don't you think about that for a minute, what we mean by fruitive. Prabhupada uses this word a lot, right? Fruitive activities, we find this often in the Bhagavad Gita. What exactly does it mean? So in this form is the sum total of all of the fruitive activities of the living entities conditioned by material nature. And the first of them, who is named Brahma, or the controller of the universe, is generated from this lotus flower. This firstborn living being, unlike all the others, has no material father, and thus he is called self-born or Swayambhu. He goes to sleep with Narayana at the time of devastation, and when there is another creation, he is born in this way. Now that almost sounds like it's the same jiva, doesn't it? But is it the same jiva that takes birth as Brahma?
No,
each
no.
creation? No. So what happens to Brahma at the end of the creation? At the end of his life, what happens to Brahma?
He
can go back to Godhead. Or he takes birth again in the starts taking birth lower in the species. Prabhupada said that when we leave the spiritual world, our first birth is that of Brahma. He says, not such a big fall down. Sometimes we wonder, you know, if I was with Krishna, why did I decide to be a human in Kali Yuga? That doesn't seem like a very intelligent choice. But it's very subtle, slow fall down. Just like a person doesn't become an alcoholic in one day. They take a little drink of beer and then they say, oh, it's not so bad. Mm-hmm. Right? Some people, they take a little drink and they say, oh, never again. That's it. I'm sure some jivas, they become Brahman and then that's it. They immediately go back to Godhead. And others, like probably all of us, unless some of us are nityasiddhas who've come here to preach. So we said, oh, it's not so bad. And then we got attached to the creation and gradually took birth. So some of the Lord Brahmas are jivas coming from the spiritual world, and some are jivas going up. Some are engaged in fruitive activities. It says in the Bhagavatam, if you do your Varnashram perfectly for 100 births, you can take birth as Lord Brahma. So then they're karmis, as we say. Or some of them may be very advanced bhaktas. He goes to sleep with Narayana at the time of devastation, and when there is another creation, he is born in this way. From this description, we have the conception of three: the gross Virat form, the subtle Hiranyagarbha, and the material creative force, Brahma. So we have the material elements, the super soul, and Brahma. So Brahma goes to sleep, or the lower living entities go to sleep, and again they're awakened. Again they're awakened to their fruitive activities. So generally we are working for fruit, but the fruit we are working for causes this repeated birth and death. Bhupa, bhupa, praliyate. Again and again, everything is dissolved, and again, everything is creative. So fruitive activities means that my happiness, my conception of happiness, is coming from the result. I'm looking for happiness in the result. Right? So I'm doing some work, I'm doing some karma, and by that karma, I want the result. What kind of results are people looking for?
Material.
Give me some examples.
Knowledge.
Knowledge.
Wealth.
Wealth.
wealth, position, health, fame,
family,
community, status. They're looking for some particular result. You know, you're doing something in your job and you want the project to be successful, make a lot of money. You want to sell a lot of air conditioners or automobile tires or, right? And you want to get good grades on your exam, isn't it? Huh? Or you want to get the toy that you want. That's your result. So fruitive activities means activities that have the purpose of generating a particular result, and our happiness is invested in the result. If I get that result, I'm happy. If I don't get that result, I'm unhappy. Right? You're working hard, and if you have a new project, and if nobody buys your tires, then you're sad. Or you study for your exam, and if you don't get an A, then you're sad. Even if you get a B+, you're very sad. Is that correct?
Yes.
So that's fruitive activities. And fruitive activities also means I'm looking for a result for myself. I'm thinking of how I can satisfy the body and the mind, how I can satisfy the senses. Now this leads to repeated birth and death, but it also leads to a condition of almost constant misery. So let's think about why. What does Krishna say? Sparshaja. This happiness that comes from touch is dukkha yoni. It's the source of all misery. Touch doesn't just mean skin. My eyes are touching light. My ears are touching sound waves. My nose are touching the odors. My tongue is touching the taste of the food. All these sort of pleasures that are based on a fruit. So let's first look at it from the point of view of fruit. So if my happiness is dependent on the result, is the result always what we want? How often do we get, just think for a minute, each of us, it will be different for each of us. How many times, what percentage of the time do you get the results you want? Just think about it for a minute. Thinking for myself, maybe 20-30% of the time. I get exactly the result that I want, when I want, how I want. Maybe for some of you it's 5%, maybe for some of you it's 70%. But I don't think anybody here get 100%? No. All right, so if my happiness is in the result, then I'm only going to be happy some of the time. And some of the time I'm going to be very unhappy, very disappointed, frustrated, angry. Okay? Especially if I blame not getting the result on somebody. If I blame it on myself, I'll be hating myself. If I blame it on others, I'll be angry with them. So whatever percentage you're getting, ultimately only that percent can you be happy. Also, that's not happiness all the time. It's only happiness when you get the result. You get the good grade on your exam, you're happy for how long? An hour, a day, 2 days, 1 week? Then again you're preparing for another exam. Right? You sell the tires, you buy the new house, you marry the perfect person, whatever, you know? And you're happy for a little while, and then you make another goal. Another goal. And all the time you're working for the goal, your happiness is more in imagining the future than in what you have right now. So you're just thinking, when I get that, 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 then I'll be happy. And sometimes you're thinking about the past and thinking, I made this mistake in the past, this happened in the past, that's not very good, I lost this thing. Right? But at the present moment that you're in, you're not experiencing any happiness, or very little. But at the moment you're in, you're not, and then when you get the result, it's like a gamble, you don't know. Maybe it'll work, maybe it won't. So what percentage of your life are you actually happy? Very, very small percentage. And even that happiness you get, the fruitive result means I'm looking for myself, and I'm thinking a false self. I'm looking for happiness with the body and the mind, which doesn't really touch me. It's something like you put gasoline, you call here gas or petrol?
Gas.
I'm not sure. Some of you speak American, some of you speak British. That stuff that they come at, that you get at the station, the gas or the petrol, you put it in your car, but still you're hungry. Right? That doesn't satisfy your belly. And same way, you put food in the body, it doesn't feed the soul. What you do for the senses, it's just an external dress. It's like if you if you're very hot and sweaty. I think in Bahrain you get very hot and sweaty a lot. So let's say you do not bathe, but you put on clean clothes. The material pleasure is like that. It's just superficial. It's not really touching the self. Or another example, if you're reading some book, or you're watching a movie, or you're playing a computer game, and the character in the book, or the movie, or the computer game is getting something wonderful. And you may have some feeling of, oh, excitement. But it's not really you. The character in the book is getting the money, the character in the computer game is killing the monster, the character in the movie is winning the beautiful princess, but you're not. So there's a little bit of, we call vicarious enjoyment, where I'm identifying emotionally with that character. But that enjoyment is not my enjoyment. When I put down the book, when I leave the theater, when I turn off the computer, I don't have the money, right? I don't have the heroism, I don't have the anything. It's not mine. So everything in this world is like that, or Shastra compares to a dream. Have you ever eaten food in a dream? Yeah, I've eaten, especially on a fast day if I take a nap. And this dream food, you know, you keep eating it and eating it. At some point in the dream you say, why am I eating so much? And I'm still not satisfied. I've had this experience several times, or, you know, drinking water in a dream, and you're drinking, drinking, drinking. Finally you wake up in the middle of the night and you say, oh, I need to drink some real water. So are all of this, these fruits that we're looking for, they're not touching us. They're not touching us. Krishna compares this in the 15th chapter to a what? An upside down tree. Upside down tree. So my parents used to have a painting of a tree by the water, and you see the reflection of the tree in the water. So the tree in the water may look like it has fruits, but if you try to get them, you simply get wet. Or we think about, Krishna says, Maya is like a reflection. He says, whatever appears to be of value, if it is without relation to me, it has no reality. Know it to be my illusory energy, that reflection that appears to be in darkness. So I have in front of me a fruit. In front of me I see there's wealth, there's a house, there's a beautiful wife, handsome, rich husband, right? There's a degree, there's an A on my exam, there's my new fire truck I want to buy, whatever is your fruit. There's the new promotion I want to get, new car. You see this in front of you, but when you go to grab it, you simply hurt your hand because it's a reflection. Now, if it's a reflection, what does that tell you? Where is the real fruit? Where's the real fruit? Behind you. The real fruit is behind you. Bahir Mukhe, we've turned our faces from Krishna, and we've turned our face away from Krishna, and we're grabbing for the reflection. So why does this lead to repeated birth and death? Because I'm always thinking in the future, in the future, in the future, in the future. I'm putting my desires in the future. I'm banking on the future. And I'm just thinking just ahead, like the donkey with the carrot. Right? You've seen that people do like this. Of course, the owner has to give the donkey a little grass sometimes. Even the donkey will not go for a carrot forever without getting it at the end of the day. So Maya gives a little bit sometimes. A little bit. Compared like drops of water in a desert. There's little. Sometimes we get the results we want and we get a little illusory enjoyment temporarily. And then we think, oh, if I could just somehow increase this and have it all the time, then I would be happy. And we're looking at our situation. So the five-year-old is thinking, when I get to be seven, then I will be happy. And the seven-year-old is thinking, when I'm 12, then I will be happy. I remember when I was five, looking at the seven-year-olds in school and thinking, when I get to be seven, then I will be happy. Because in the bus on the way to school, the seven-year-olds used to roll up their copybook and hit the little children over the head. You know, like that, when I get to be the big shot, then I'll be able to enjoy. And then you think, once I get to be, 18, then I'll be happy. When I finish my university education, then I'll be happy. When I get a really good, prestigious job, then I'll be happy. When I get married, then I'll be happy. When I get a nice house, then I'll be happy. When I put good furniture in my house, then I'll be happy. When I marry the perfect person, then I'll be happy. Right? When I have children, then I'll be happy. When my children grow up, then I'll be happy. When I can retire from family life, then I'll be happy. When I can finish making all my money in Bahrain and move back to India, then I'll be happy. And then finally, at the end of life, you think, I made so many mistakes. I made so many mistakes. If only I could do it again. Then I wouldn't make so many mistakes. I'd get the right degree, I'd marry a different person, I'd live in a different country, I'd have a different career, and then I would be happy. And Krishna says, okay. Okay. Try it again. So therefore, the fruit of activities of the living entity is what's pushing this rebirth. This idea for fruits is pushing birth after birth after birth after birth after birth. Because you cannot try to fulfill all these desires in one body. Not possible. Certain desires you can only fulfill in a male body. Certain desires you can only fulfill in a female body. Certain desires you can only fulfill in an Indian body. Certain desires you can only fulfill in an American body. Certain desires you can only fulfill in an eagle body. Sometimes people try to change in this life, you know. You find the Indians move to America and try to become really American. Or sometimes you see Americans go to India and try to become really Indian. And nowadays people cut up their bodies and try to change from male to female and things like that. Doesn't really work. So people try to change in this life also. But anyway, we cannot fulfill all of our material desires in one body. It's not possible. Therefore, there must be death. And you have to forget. If you remember, I was an Indian man last life, and now you're an American woman. It's a little disturbing. So you have to forget. You have to forget. And then you try, okay. Try in this body. Try in this body. Try in this body. Try in this body. Like someone going to one movie after another, after another. Okay, well, that was all right, but now I want to detect. Okay, now try that movie. So again and again and again and again. And is this birth and death very pleasing? Does it give us what we want? What is it we really want? And then we list what we really want. What do we really want? We really want happiness, and we really want happiness that is constant. We want to be happy all the time. Anybody want to be miserable? Nobody goes to the doctor and say, I'm too happy, give me a pill to make me depressed. And nobody goes to the hairdresser, please make my hair gray. Nobody wants. So we're looking for happiness all the time, and we're looking for happiness that is unlimited in quality and also unlimited in time and is not boring, that's full of variety. What else are we looking for?
Health.
Health means life. We're looking for vital life. Looking for health means we want vital life. We want eternal life that's full of strength and vitality. What else are we looking for?
Peace.
We definitely want peace. What else?
Back to Godhead.
Back to Godhead. Back to God. What does that mean, back to God? I'm trying to analyze what that means. Trying to break it down. Well, unlimited happiness. Eternal, vital life, peace. What else do we want?
All my relatives to be with me all the time.
Community. I want community. I want to be part of a community. I don't want to be alone. And I want it to be a community of people who love me. I love them. We understand each other. Family means there's some harmony. I have to feel some connection. We're individuals, but we feel connected. And we all are looking for community. What else are we looking for?
Full knowledge.
Full knowledge. We want to understand things. How does something work? How is it like that? When we're making decisions in life, we always wish we could know how it would turn out, so we'll make the best decisions. Otherwise, it's kind of like driving without a map. You know, you don't know where you're going, where it's going, what street you're going to end up as you're driving. So we want knowledge. What else are we looking for?
Comfort.
Comfort is happiness. What?
Success.
All right, we wish to be, I'd say power. We're looking for power. What else?
Fame.
We want to be recognized. We want someone to say, you're really special. We want community, but we also want to be special. What else are we looking for?
Beauty.
Yes, nobody goes to the plastic surgeon, please make me ugly. No one buys cosmetics to me, you know. Let me make big black circles under my eyes. And except for a drama. What else are we looking for?
Control,
power. Good quality, beauty. We want beauty not only ourselves, but beauty around us. Just like we visited some homes that are very beautiful. Everything in the home is beautiful. People want to surround themselves with beauty and harmony. Control, we also want some control over our own life and our own destiny. A sense of our own individuality. We also want freedom. Prabhupada says the need of the soul is for complete freedom. Complete freedom to go wherever you want, to do whatever you want. So these are what we're really looking for. And fruit of mentality means, I think I'm going to find this in some external thing in this world that interacts with my senses and mind. I think my house will give me freedom, that my family will give me community, that my status in society will give me power, that reputation and fame in society is going to give me that sense of being unique and dear to someone that I want. We think all these things will give us that, do they?
No.
Not in as completely satisfying way, do they? No. I have not met the person that says, yes, I have everything that I want all the time. Maybe you say that for 1 minute. You just got the promotion, you just got the new car, you just got the new house, and you say, I've got it. But after a while, you see, it's not like that. You start seeing the problems, isn't it? You know? You buy yourself a new computer, and you think, perfect computer, and after you use it for a while, you find, oh, this has this problem, and that problem, and the other problem. You marry the perfect person, and then you see they leave their dirty socks on the floor. If it's not exactly what I wanted, they don't always exactly understand me. Yeah, you have the family's not always harmonious. This auntie, this brother-in-law, you know, some problem. Sometimes these things are more problems. So the devotee is not trying to stop desires. The Buddha's solution to this problem is stop desires. Don't care anymore about happiness. Don't care about, well, they say care about peace. They didn't give that one up. Don't care about happiness. Don't care about knowledge. Don't care about life. Don't care about freedom. Don't care about autonomy. Don't care about community. Don't care about having a sense of distinction and specialness. Forget all that. Just become nothing or just merge in the Brahman. And sometimes materially, we call it bhoga tyaga. A person says, I'm going to try for fruit of things. No, it's not working. I renounce it. And then you can't stay there. No, now I'm going to try. Now I renounce. Now I'm going to try. Now I renounce. Now I'm going to try. Now I renounce. Let me get it. Oh, it's not working. Okay, I'm detached. But then these come up again. So where are all these needs really coming from? They're all coming from the soul. This all exists in our home. Just like a fish doesn't desire to breathe air. But if I go underwater, I want to breathe air. Or there are creatures in the desert that don't need to drink water. They don't, ever. They can get some water just from the plants. But I need to drink water. If I'm in the desert, I will feel thirsty. So these things are not available here. Unlimited happiness, knowledge, eternal, vibrant, healthy life, the perfect community where I get to be myself, and yet there's a sense of harmony and understanding and working together, full freedom, full peace, actual control over my life. And it's not available here, is it? Little bit sometimes. So why do I want these things? And not just I want them. You want them, and you want them, and everybody. Not even just the human beings. Even the bugs want these things. Even they've done experiments, even the plants. So where does this desire come from? This shows that I am not part of this world. Maybe if one person had that desire, then you'd say they were mentally ill. But everybody wants it. We all want something impossible on a material point of view. This shows I'm not part of this world. This is strong evidence that I'm in a foreign environment. So the devotees don't say, let's stop these things. They say, these things are evidence that I actually have them somewhere. Otherwise, where would the desire come from? They're not just desires, they're practically needs. It's like needing air. You know, those of you who are medical doctors, you know a person cannot just hold their breath. There's automatic reflex. You'll start breathing. In the same way, you cannot just say, I'm not going to care anymore about freedom. I'm not going to care anymore about beauty. I'm not going to care anymore about autonomy. I'm not going to care anymore about community. I'll simply have no desires. It will come up again. Because those are the needs of the soul. Those are evidence of where we belong. And the needs of the soul can only be met spiritually. How can you meet spiritual needs materially? Just like you can't meet the needs of a body by putting fuel in your car. Right? You can't meet the needs of your body just with ones and zeros on the computer screen. The character in the game is eating. You have to eat. So the devotees are not interested in fruitive activities. They renounce all fruitive activities. It doesn't mean they renounce activities. But they renounce activities where they're thinking their personal happiness is in the result, and they're defining that result by enjoyment for the senses and the mind. But the devotees also have desires. The devotees are also looking for some result. It's not that the devotees don't care about a result. What result are the devotees looking for?
Spiritual bliss.
Spiritual bliss. And what is the source of spiritual bliss?
Krishna.
Pleasing Krishna. Pleasing Krishna. Doing something that pleases Krishna. Acting in a relationship with Krishna. Now, if we're also thinking that is something future, or that is something that I can only attain once I've done this and that shift in the material world, then we're just putting a coating of spiritual idea on something material. If I'm thinking the way I'll please Krishna is we'll have a big program. The way I'll please Krishna is we'll have a temple. The way I'll please Krishna is we'll distribute a lot of books. And you're thinking in terms of the number of books distributed or the building of the temple as your source of happiness. That is the same thing. What the devotee's source of happiness is right now. It's always in the present. Actually, in the spiritual world, you know, time is only in the present. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati and Srila Prabhupada both explain. There's always the present. The thing most unlike spirituality is future. It never exists. You know that? There's no future. It never happens. It's always the present. At least the past has some reality. The future is this maya, you know, come for the future. So a devotee is not putting their happiness in the future. They're enthusiastic to build a temple for Krishna. They're enthusiastic to do a program for Krishna. They're enthusiastic to distribute books for Krishna. They're enthusiastic to cook for Krishna. But the source of their happiness is in that moment. It's in that moment of stirring the potatoes. It's in that moment of calling someone and say, hey, can you donate to build the building? It's in that moment of talking to the contractor. It's in that moment. And the happiness is coming from their relationship with Krishna and pleasing Krishna. Because there's another problem with results. Can I control the results? We can't control the results. If our happiness is based in something we can't control, what are we going to be?
Miserable,
frustrated, and very frightened. I'm going to try to arrange everything so I can control the results. But you can't control the results. But what I can control is I can control whether or not I'm having a relationship with Krishna now. Am I dedicating this to Krishna now? Whatever you're doing, whether it's working at your job, driving in your car, taking care of your children, studying for your exam, playing with your toys, whispering to your friends in the middle of class. Whatever you're doing, it should be with the view of, am I pleasing Krishna now? Am I connecting with Krishna now? Am I connecting with Krishna now? Am I connecting with Krishna now? And when we're connected with Krishna, he's the reservoir of all pleasure. One will start to get unlimited bliss. And Krishna, tesam satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam dadami buddhi yogam kamyenamam upayanti te. He will give you knowledge. And one will start to feel, I'm not this body. Nityo, ajo, shasvato, yam purano, nahanyate, yandamane, shriye. I'm not this body, I'm always alive. My body's old, my body's sick, doesn't matter, it's not me. Just the character in the movie is sick, not me. And you start to feel eternal life. And one starts to awaken one's actual community. Of course, even in this world, we have the Bhakti Sangha. But one starts to remember not only oneself. We have our own family. You know that? In Golok Vrindavan, we have our eternal mother and father, maybe brothers and sisters, a whole family. We have a home. We have a place. We start to remember that. Oh, I have a real community. We start to feel a sense of community with the personalities of the Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita. We start to feel that we know Ramananda Roy, Swarup Damodar, Gadadhar Pandit, Raghunath Das Goswami, more contemporary, Narahari, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta. We start feeling that they're part of our community. And as far as a sense of power, when one is connected with the power, one also has power. And freedom. And then we're no longer bound by the modes of material nature. The modes of material nature only act upon us if we want fruit of results. Because if you want fruit of results, you want something that's false. And if you want something that's false, you have to be put into illusion. If you see truth, how can you get something that's false? You can't. You have to be put into an illusion to get something illusory. So when you give up the desire for something illusory, then Krishna will remove the illusion. And one will have real knowledge. And even this desire for fame, which Bhaktivinoda Thakur says is the root of all anarthas. Do you know there's a transcendental component, a transcendental reality, you could say, of that? Do you know that? When Akura is going to Vrindavan, he's thinking, Krishna will greet me. You all know that story? Krishna will greet me. And he'll recognize me, and he'll say, what will he say? What is Akura thinking Krishna will say? He'll say, who reads Krishna book here? Uncle Akura. At that time, my life will be successful. And Prabhupada says, if you don't live to be recognized by Krishna, your life is condemned. This desire, even this desire to be special, to be recognized, prophet adoration and distinction. We want Krishna to recognize us. We want to be a distinct person, not just part of the crowd. We want Krishna to recognize us, to say, well done, good and faithful servant. Jesus tells a very nice story about that. He tells the story of a master who had three servants. He gave one servant one coin, gave one servant five coins, another servant 10 coins. He said, I'm going to do some business, I'll be back. So the servant who had the one coin, he buried it in the ground, anything, I'll keep my master's property safe. The one who had 5 coins, he invested it, he doubled it, made it 10 coins. The one who had 10 coins used it and made it 10 times. He had 100 coins. So the master came back, and the one who had buried the one coin, he took it away. And the ones who had doubled, he gave them even more. And he said to them, "Well done, good and faithful servant." So that's what we want. Krishna's in control of the result. It's not under our control. If the temple gets built, if the books get distributed, if you make a lot of money, we cannot control that. Nor is that the source of our happiness. That's Krishna's business. But I'm doing my service for Krishna, thinking about him, dedicating it to him, thinking about my Guru Maharaj, thinking about the other Vaishnavas, thinking about the predecessor Acharyas. Will they be pleased with me? And we're looking for Krishna to say, for Guru to say, "Well done, good and faithful servant." That's what we want. That kind of recognition. Sanatana Goswami says in Brihad Bhagavatamrita that all the residents of Goloka Vrindavan think they are Krishna's favorites. And what's really amazing is that each of them is. Generally, favorite means only can be one, right? But everyone feels, "I am Krishna's favorite. Krishna's only looking at me. I cannot do that. If I'm looking at you, I can't also be looking at you." Mm-hmm. Right? But when Krishna's sitting with the cowherd boys, each cowherd boy thinks Krishna's facing me. He's looking at me. When Krishna's dancing with the gopis, each gopi thinks Krishna's only dancing with me. Each queen is thinking Krishna's only in my house. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's dancing, each kirtan party is thinking Lord Chaitanya's only dancing in my kirtan party. Even every tree in Vrindavan, Krishna is reciprocating with every tree, every blade of grass. And every living entity is feeling I'm special, because we are special. There's nobody like us. Nobody, ever, never has been, never will be. You know the story of Brahma stealing the boys and calves? Right? So he takes them, puts them in a cave, puts them into mystic slumber, then he comes back and what does he see? New ones. And he said, what's going on here? How is there new ones? He looks in the cave and they're sleeping, and he goes back and they're there, and he thinks maybe Krishna's switching them very fast, the Acharya say. And he's bewildered and he goes into samadhi. He closes all of his chakras. This is in the commentary of the Acharyas. He closes all of his chakras, expands his omniscience. We're reading here about Lord Brahma. And he still can't understand. He said, "This is impossible. Why is it impossible? What was impossible?"
Brahma is the creator.
He's the creator, and why is he thinking this is impossible situation? Yes, but why is he thinking having this other set of boys and calves is impossible?
Because
there's only one. Yes, because there can only be one jiva. Like that. And those were exact copies. Exact copies. But they weren't jivas. They weren't jivas. They were Krishna. And Brahmanu, each jiva is unique. Not possible to have two jivas exactly the same. Each of us are unique. We each have some special service we can offer to Krishna that nobody else offers. Of course, if we don't offer it, Krishna can do himself, like Krishna can expand as the cowherd boys. He's Atmaram Aptakam. He doesn't need us. It's not that he's saying, I'm not getting my such and such because that jiva is in Maya. But he'd rather get it from us. More pleasurable for him to get it from us than to manifest it himself. And he likes to see us happy also. His main pleasure is seeing us happy. So even that desire to be autonomous, to be special, to have that special relationship with someone. Lord Kapiladev said that the Lord takes whatever form the devotee desires. Just imagine. We try for that in this world, We try to mold the people in our life to be what we want them to be. It doesn't work very well. You tried it with your spouse, you tried it with your children, They're each their own persons. But Krishna molds according to the desire of the devotee. So everything we want, those things we want are not bad. None of these things we want are bad. They're not evil. They come from the soul. It's the way we're trying to get them that's bad and evil. Wanting to eat is not evil, but if I steal to eat, that is evil. So wanting freedom, wanting community, wanting autonomy, even wanting power, wanting to be distinct, wanting peace. Those are not evil desires. But we will not achieve them in the fruit of things of the world. That will only get us repeated birth and death. Again, we will enter into the abdomen of the Lord, and again we will be manifested over and over and over again. Until you say, you know, I don't think there's any fruit here. I think it's a mirror. I think the fruit is behind me. And the real problem is having enough humility to admit that I've been foolish enough to try to get fruit out of a mirror for 10 billion lifetimes. That is the main block to advancement, to have that degree of humility. So throughout the day, we should notice, where am I investing my happiness? Where is my investment? Am I investing it in something future that's fruitive, maybe even disguising it as something spiritual? Rupa Goswami said many weeds look like bhakti. Am I saying, when I get this, only if I had this, only if I was this, only if I went there, only if... You switch it. If only I love Krishna. Anytime the mind goes, only if this, only if this, only if this, only... And you're thinking, future, 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 future. Think, only if I love Krishna now. How can I connect with Krishna now? What can I do right now, this moment, to connect with Krishna? You can say, well, I don't really know Krishna. How am I going to connect with him? But Krishna says all different ways you can connect with him. He says, I am the light of the sun. It's pretty simple. He says that he's the fire of digestion. That means the warmth of our own bodies is Krishna. You always have that with you, right? Maybe sometimes the sun goes down, you're in a dark room, but you have the warmth of your own body. That's Krishna. Meditate on how it's Krishna. The force that's holding us to the earth, what is that? It's Balaram. Krishna's all attractive. We're being attracted to the earth. Always there's gravity, you can think. That's Krishna. That's Krishna. My ability is Krishna. He says, I'm the ability in man. My intelligence. He says, I'm the intelligence of the intelligent. That's Krishna. He says, I'm the strength of the strong. That's Krishna. Your mental strength, your physical strength. That's Krishna. I'm the life of all that lives. That feeling of being alive. That's Krishna. What to speak of being able to think about Krishna personally? How he has his swinging Makara earrings and his long garland and his tinkling angle bells and his shimmering yellow dhoti and his curling hair. And he likes to talk to the devotees just through his eyes. And all the different devotees and all the different wonderful pastimes they're doing, how Krishna's dancing on Kaliya. We all like to see entertainment, right? When I was in Russia, the devotees did this incredible dance with fireworks. Actual fireworks. They're spinning these rods that have fireworks shooting out of the sides. They have fireworks coming out of their hats and fireworks coming out of their shoulders. Incredible. That's incredible. So what to speak of Krishna dancing on Kaliya? At least those devotees had a stage that wasn't moving, you know. And Krishna's dancing on Kaliya had 1,000 heads, 101 mane heads. And you think a snake's skin in the water is going to be very slippery. And Kali is spewing out poison and fire. So each head is shooting out poison and fire, and the top of the head is very slippery, and Kali is trying to kill him and bite him, and Krishna is jumping from one to the other and dancing. Right? And just like these devotees, why were they doing this show? What were they doing it for? They wanted what? They wanted the audience to appreciate. So Krishna wants us to appreciate. Also, everybody wants to be appreciated. I go to someone's house for prasad and they're all, do you appreciate? Do you appreciate? Hey, it's natural. Krishna's working the same thing. You know, the man comes home from work. Why does the man have a wife? He wants somebody to appreciate. Usually she doesn't. But that's what he's looking for. And the wife also wants some to appreciate. Right? The children are showing you what they're doing. Look, 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 look. So Krishna also wants that. Oh, how clever. How you're dancing on all these moving, you know, 1,000 moving surfaces that are all slippery with fire coming out. And Krishna's doing this dance that's so intricate. The demigods are watching and they're trying on the side to synchronize, and they can't. They can't follow his movements, although they're not on snakes that are slippery with fire. They can't do it, and they just do their own complementary dance. They can't do a synchronized dance. So Krishna wants us to appreciate him. Even just to appreciate his wonder in the world. It's just this morning hearing how Akura is saying, the bones are your mountains, the herbs and trees are your hair, the sky is your navel. And somehow to appreciate Krishna. And whatever you do think, whatever you do accomplish, Krishna's giving me this ability, Krishna's giving me this intelligence. How wonderful Krishna is, how wonderful Krishna is. And if you do that, then my dear friends, you will have joy and freedom and knowledge and life and community and autonomy and power and control every moment that nobody can take away. It won't go away even if you lose all your money and your spouse dies or they throw you out of the country, you lose your job, you lose your health. It won't matter. Because that's not where your happiness is invested. Just like if the people in the house across the street have their house burned down, that's very sad, but that's not where my happiness is invested. If my happiness is not invested in the fruit of things of this world, then you know what? Nobody can take my happiness away from me. It becomes something I can control. How much I think about Krishna, how much I relate to Krishna, how much I'm dedicating, not just when the project's finished I dedicate it to Krishna, but how much I'm dedicating it to Krishna now, and now, and now, and now. You may say, that's very hard. We have to practice. Why does it come naturally? Because we've been accustomed for billions and billions and billions of years to doing it wrong. So it takes a little while to shift. Be patient. Be patient. You can't go from being naturally in Maya to be naturally Krishna conscious. One moment. You could theoretically, but it won't happen. First you'll become aware. Oh, I'm in Maya. I'm looking for my happiness in the things of this world and in the future. You'll become aware. And then you have to intentionally, purposefully, deliberately shift it. It will feel a little unnatural. It will feel a little awkward. You have to make some endeavor. And as you keep doing that, Krishna will notice you're making the endeavor. Yay, tamam prapadante. He'll reciprocate. He'll manifest. And everything will gradually become easier and easier and easier. And then you'll start having param drishta nivartate. You'll say, this is so much better. I'm no longer dependent on whether or not I sell the tires, whether or not I get a good grade in the exam. I'm not dependent on those things for my happiness. I'm still trying for those things. I'm still trying, maybe harder than the materialists. Maybe harder for the materialists, but my happiness is in the trying for it. My happiness is in offering that trying to Krishna, not whether or not it happens. And if we stay in the mode of fruitive activities, then again we will be part of this bud of the lotus flower. Again, we will be manifesting in some new body, in some new place, a new situation, and again, trying and trying again. So thank you very much. And tonight, Krishna willing, we'll be looking at how to balance our material and spiritual life. Okay. Do we have time? Do we have time for questions or no? Okay. How much time do we have?
10 minutes.
10 minutes, okay, till 9:20. Does anyone have questions, comments, additions, subtractions, chastisements?
You said that spiritual world, everybody feels special.
Yes.
Right? But since believe or false ego here, we relate every time when you want to feel special, it's a false ego. That you're trying to feel special because of your false ego. So is there, for a jiva, is there actually a need to feel special?
Yes, there's a need to feel special. Yes.
So,
definitely.
So why does that propensity come? Because there's no false ego. What is actually driving that?
Because I have something special to offer to Krishna. You know, there's five primary rasas, right? But in those rasas, there's divisions. And in the nectar of devotion, you read some of those divisions. Like there's some cowherd boys, they're a little younger than Krishna, some are the same age, some are a little older, and their rasa is a little different. And the gopis, there's right-wing gopis and there's left-wing gopis. And then there's further delineations. The Goswamis have many literatures where they describe. And they describe certain number of categories at a certain level, like you have major category from the major category, maybe two or three subcategories from each of those other subcategories. They stop at maybe level three or four. But each of us has our particular subcategory. I have a particular flavor, you could say. Rasa means taste. So I have in Ayurveda, there's six main tastes: sweet, salty, pungent, bitter, astringent. Anyway, six. I get them: sweet, salty, bitter, pungent, sour, and astringent. Thank you. So there's six main tastes, but think of all the varieties of tastes there are in food. It's not just it's sweet. There's not only six tastes in food, isn't it? There's a little difference between a broccoli and a cauliflower. There's a little difference between that zucchini you have here in Bahrain and the zucchini in America. It's a little different. Right? So many. So each of us has a particular rasa with Krishna that only I have. Nobody else has it. Nobody. And the highest pleasure for Krishna is to taste all those tastes. Krishna wants to taste all the tastes. My desire to be distinct is part of my wanting to give Krishna pleasure. Because I can give Krishna pleasure in a distinct way nobody else can do. You cannot please Krishna the way I can, and I cannot please Krishna the way you can. Therefore, the devotees are not envious. Therefore, the devotees want Krishna to be enjoying all the jivas. Because if I really want to make Krishna happy, he has to enjoy everyone. He can get that flavor from himself. He doesn't require me. He doesn't need me to give him that particular flavor of pleasure. But he'd prefer that. That's why I exist. And Krishna also gives me a particular pleasure. No one else is exactly experiencing that. That exchange, Krishna wants that. So I want to be who I am. I want to be me. That's the highest thing I can give to Krishna, is me. Yeah, it's me, who I am, as a distinct individual. Nobody else can give that to Krishna except for me. So of course I want to give it to him. That's the spiritual root of the desire to be special. Not to think I am so great. Because I didn't earn this. What I am, I didn't earn. It's just who I am. Not by, you know, oh, I've done this and I've done. No. It's just, there's no deserving. It just is.
With the real you.
Yeah, that's all.
That brings me to the second question from your answer. You said that because every jiva has a special relationship with the Lord, he doesn't feel envious towards other jivas.
Yes, because he cannot provide what the other jivas can provide.
So how come, you know, like when we say, when we read book Prabhupada, that we were envious and that's why we are here?
You have the option. The option is always there. There's no love if there's not an option not to love. The table can't love me. The difference between matter and spirit is very simple, you know. The paper can't say what? What can the paper not say? Stop. Cup, come to my hand and give me water. And the cup cannot say?
No.
It cannot say no. This cup cannot say no. Doesn't have the capacity to say no. But because it can't say no, there's no love. You can't love something that can't say no. Love can only be if the capacity for no is there. One of the ways we exhibit our envy of Krishna is instead of wanting love, we want rape. We want to force. We try to force the living beings around us to behave in a particular way. We try to force material nature to behave in a particular way. and we try to force our own bodies and minds to behave in a particular way. Ultimately, we're trying to force Krishna to behave in a particular way. That's not how Krishna operates. It's not how he operates. He's interested in love. He's not interested in force. It doesn't appeal to him. He'll punish living entities if necessary. But that doesn't appeal to him. He's not interested in that at all. But that capacity has to be there in us to say no. Must be. That means that some of us will say no. It's foolish. It's foolish.
Excuse me.
Yes.
When you said, I am something great, then that means there is an aham coming in, right? That great aham.
Aham is there.
But Krishna says aham is the first thing to be taken out.
No.
Yes?
No. Sometimes I think we should plan it. You know how in movies and television they have background music that perfectly suits the emotional... We should work it out all beforehand. At which point in the lecture are we going to have which emotions, and then that proper mobile turns on. You don't want to get rid of a hum. You want to get rid of thinking I'm God. The thing we want to get rid of is the false ego. The false ego is that I am the supreme controller. I am the master. I am the enjoyer. Everything is meant for my pleasure. I am the enjoyer instead of the enjoyed. The enjoyed also enjoys.
When I take out the aham, then my self-awareness is coming, right?
No. No, you want to take out the false aham. You want to take out, you know, I am a white American woman, aham. But you don't want to take out the I exist, aham. I am Krishna's servant, Jivaraswaro Paya Krishnara Nichadasa. You don't want to take out that aham. You want to cultivate that aham. I mean, in this world, I have to act as a white American woman. I can't act as an Indian man or a Chinese man or an African woman. I have to act, I can't act as an elephant or a cow. I mean, I have to act according to the... I have this car. We each have a car, you know, or some of us have a bicycle, and some of us have a jet plane, whatever, you know. You have your vehicle. The aham you want to get rid of is thinking I'm the vehicle. You're in the vehicle. You got to use the vehicle you have, whatever. Don't envy other people's vehicle. What a waste of time. And don't try to get a different vehicle. Just whatever vehicle you have. But I'm not the vehicle. I'm not the car or the plane or the... We're so proud. I'm a boat. I'm a motorcycle. I'm better than you bicycles. I mean, it's just stupid. But to know I'm the driver? That aham you want to know. We're not Buddhists. We want to revive that. Who am I? Starts with just, I'm a servant. Starts with, I'm a servant. I'm meant to be enjoyed by Krishna. In which case, I will have unlimited enjoyment myself. It's not like in this world, if I submit myself to be enjoyed by someone else, it's exploitive and nasty. It's not like that with Krishna. And then I have my identity. We have our eternal form. Yad bhava bhavi tadiyo manujastataiva samprapya rupa mahima sanayana bhusha suktaya meva nigama pratitais divanti govindamari purushantam maham bhujami. I have even my ornaments, my chairs. We were at this house here. People have these beautiful chairs, you know. I have my spiritual chairs. I have a home. I have chairs. I have family. I have a form. I have my favorite colors, my favorite foods. Sometimes Krishna says to Mother Yasoda, I want some more yogurt. She goes in the kitchen, and then he takes off his plate, the favorite food of each of the cowherd boys, and sticks it on their plate. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would also do that. He'd serve each of the associates their favorite food. Aham means I have a personality. Personality means there's some things I like. I like certain colors. I like certain foods. I like certain activities. I'm good at certain things. Very expert at certain things. And that exists eternally. I have that. But now it's covered. I'm like an actor in a play who is assuming another role. You know, when you've been in a drama, any of you ever been in a drama?
Yes.
Yeah? And then you really try to get into the character? I used to be typecast as Shurpanaka. I was in the Ramayana for a long, long time. And I never wanted to get into the character. the director would say, you've got to think like a demon. See that Ram like a big gulabjamin, you know? I'd be backstage before I'd come on. I'd be saying the prayers of the demons. So much wealth do I have today, and I will gain more according to my schemes, my enemies. But, you know, I try to meditate on being a demon. So the good actor takes on the role of the character, not just the costume and the makeup, but the role. So in this world, we've taken on this role. We believe, I am this, I am this. I have this personality, I have this inclinations, I have this favorite thing, I have this home. That, you use that for Krishna. You're in it. You know, you're in the drama, you have the costume on, use it for Krishna. But that's not, you don't identify with it. Identify with the real self. Whatever expertise I have in this body, whatever, use that for Krishna. But that's not my real self. Okay, thank you very much. We'll see you this evening. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.